So today on the 31st episode of the Loopcast, I have Colin here, who is, we're going to talk about the Pakistan's elections that happened, I think it was on the 11th, that's Saturday, last Saturday. And so we're going to talk about the elections. So first, you know, Colin, you know, who won? You know, I think it was in the New York Times today, it was Nawaz Sharif. You know, tell us about, you know, how, how did he win? You know, who voted for him? And, you know, what is the sort of significance for him to have won?
Sure. Thanks for having me back. I mean, I should preface this by saying that I've been watching the elections from abroad, so I can't tell you sort of ground level what it was like on election day itself, but at least in the days afterwards, the outcome of the polls appears to be a pretty significant victory for Nawaz Sharif and his Pakistan Muslim League party, the PMLN. A more significant victory than I will admit I was expecting going into this. I think a big concern that I had, and I think other folks had as well, that was that there was a reasonable risk that we would emerge with something like a hung parliament or a very divided National Assembly. And as it turns out, although I mean, the results were fairly, I mean, it can get complicated. We can get into some of the details of sort of region by region. But at least at the national level, the PMLN won big in Punjab, which is the largest province, home to the largest percentage of the population overall, and contributes the most seats to the National Assembly. So Sharif and his party won big in the Punjab, and that was enough to they didn't quite win an absolute majority of seats in parliament, but they were it was a considerably larger margin of victory than the previous government that was elected in 2008. So they're still in sort of coalition formation right now, negotiations, but you know, he at most will have to sort of bring over a few, maybe a handful of independent candidates, most of whom are all lining up now wanting to be on the winning team. So that works out fairly easily for him to be able to form a government. And you know, potentially he can go broader and try and bring more. He's signaled that there might be a few other smaller parties that the PMLN cooperated with at the provincial level might also bring into the national coalition, but generally speaking, a fairly solid win for the PMLN. I think perhaps to as I said, at least in my case, to a greater degree than I expected going into it. But in terms of you know, in terms of the vote and who voted for him, I mean, it is fairly notable. I mean, the PMLN won big in Punjab and pretty much across Punjab, both urban and rural. But outside of Punjab, it did not do particularly well. Only a few of its seats in parliament and in the provincial assemblies were actually won outside of Punjab. So you had other challengers I mean, the former government led by the PPP, they lost most of their seats in Punjab, but held on to the government in Sindh. And you had the big sort of outside wild card challenger was Imran Khan in the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf party. And they were mostly runners up in Punjab, gained a few seats, but did not do quite as well as they had hoped in that regard, although they did end up taking a plurality in the northwestern province, Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. So generally speaking, I mean, the whole election, and I'll stop here because I'm rambling on, but I mean, the overall turnout was quite high by all indications, particularly by Pakistani standards. The figures being thrown around is around 60%. And that's, you know, a little subject to question because, you know, I think that's votes recorded, and that's not necessarily the same thing as actual how many people cast votes, since we do have, after the election, some allegations of rigging and irregularities and all that sort of those sorts of challenges. But generally speaking, it appears to have been a fairly widely contested election with a lot of people. There was a lot of discussion of the youth vote, but also older voters as well, across the country, turning out for this. And I think there were definitely some flaws in the process, but I think generally speaking, there seems to be a pretty solid embrace of the electoral process in this vote that we saw. So that's, if nothing else, that's a positive sign, hopefully, going forward.
Definitely. Before we get into some of the sort of district issues and sort of issues at the constituency level, I'm curious, what can the United States expect from a prospective Sharif government? I mean, it
Right.
seems, I mean, you know, it seems like there's a potential, with a Democratic government, you would assume that he would be more sensitive to his constituents than sort of the demands or the requests of the United States. So where do we place, Sharif in terms of, his views of the United States and his views of sort of, the use of drones?
Right. Yeah. I mean, okay. So, I mean, Sharif's support base is generally been middle class, more politically and religiously conservative segments of society. I mean, Sharif himself, as his background is in business originally. He's sort of the son of a business magnate there, in Punjab. So more conservative, more sort of middle class, maybe lower middle class even in Punjab in some areas, support base for the PMLN. It's sort of described as as an urban party, maybe urban Punjab, but in this election we seem to have seen sort of broad-based support for the PMLN, and at least across Punjab, and I think a large part of that comes from sort of anti-incumbency attitudes towards the previous government, which struggled a lot, and general sort of sense that that the PMLN, which had been leading the Punjab province at the provincial level previously, that they had delivered, or that the Nawaz Sharif government is going to deliver on particularly on economic issues. So I think that's, I mean, in the campaign, Sharif really hit the point, his record of building motorways and these sorts of issues. So I think that those sorts of issues are probably the top of voter concerns, the real economic, jobs, sort of jobs, employment, energy, the Pakistani power crisis that they're facing in their energy sector. Those were really at the top of the agenda, but there is the question of sort of now, how is he going to reshape foreign relations as well? And this is, I mean, this is, we can sort of unpack this at length maybe, but at least initially, he's I think at least initially he has sought to portray himself as pragmatic. He has, made statements to the effect that while he wants the U.S. to sort of he wants to have a review of relations with the U.S. He wants the U.S. to sort of understand Pakistani opposition to issues like drone strikes, but he has not gone as far as some of the other candidates in terms of sort of unilaterally breaking off relations with the US, or taking steps such as attempting to shoot down drones. So I think, I mean, so I think he is trying to take a sort of a pragmatic approach to relations with the US. I mean, there's also a recognition that this is not an area, like, despite the fact that the PMLN won fairly big and look like they'll have a fairly stable government, in the center, it's not an foreign policy is not an issue that they can sort of given the role of the military in Pakistan, this is not an issue that that they can directly totally have control over either. And you know, the fact that Pakistan is dependent on the US for assistance in a lot of areas, that also is going to, you know, suggest that a sort of a more measured course, perhaps. I mean, more broadly in terms of the relation with the US, I think, I mean, and this is something we talked about, I think, in our last conversation. Over the past 5 years, there's been a real sort of decentralization in the Pakistani political system in terms of the degree to which you have sort of the sort of coalition balancing within the government really complicating its abilities to take any kind of sort of decisive policy steps, whether that's on targeting militants in the northwest, relations with the US generally, the economic issues, questions of taxes, tax revenue raising, these sorts of things. So if nothing else, I think the general sense right now is that the fact that the PMLN does seem to be coming in with something of a mandate, and a more stable government coalition might make it sort of easier to deal with at the government to government level, in the sense that it's perhaps more consolidated, in that there is at least one main actor in parliament now that we can perhaps reliably go to sort of have the civilian to civilian negotiations on these issues. But yeah, I mean, there's much more we can talk about there, but that's sort of maybe first pass on that question.
So before we move into sort of the internal dynamics, where do we place, what is the potential view of India and Afghanistan coming from the Sharif government? I mean, does Sharif, does he see himself as somebody who wants to elevate Pakistan's role regionally, or, really it's, Afghanistan and India are national security issues, so that would be, sort of delegated back to the military and to, the intelligence services. What is his view, beyond the United States and more regionally?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big question right now. I mean, this is sort of everybody's wondering to what degree what his relations with the military are going to be like, particularly on foreign policy issues, but also sort of in the sort of internal politics of military appointments and budgeting and those sorts of things. There is a really good profile on this in The Caravan, an Indian magazine, a few months back, called "Watch the Throne," which I'd recommend people checking out. Declan Walsh in the New York Times had a good piece today in today's New York Times as well on this. But I mean, it's a lot. There's a lot of uncertainty on exactly how Nawaz will balance his relations with the military, which of course in 1999 ousted him in a coup. I mean, he at least on India, he has you know he has during the campaign and since the campaign come out and said, you know, fairly explicitly that this is a relationship he wants to improve. He wants to increase ties between the two governments. He and Prime Minister Singh have already sort of exchanged messages. At some point may meet, although it looks like Singh is not going to attend his swearing in, which he was invited to. I mean, and a lot of that, I think, comes from Sharif's base, which is sort of the Punjab trading community, which, you know, over the past year or so, there was the previous government did take steps to liberalize trade with India, to reduce sort of visa barriers, other trade barriers, and it sort of stalled out in terms of the final last steps of it, in terms of formally conveying most favored nation status. In part, I think, because of again the sort of coalition sort of political balancing questions facing the previous government. But this is something that I think even the military seems to have accepted. I think partly due to kind of the poor state of Pakistan's economy generally. And so while there are definitely going to be vested interests in the Pakistani economy that are I think are going to oppose this, whether because they fear of losing out by incoming Indian trade, or whether it's the groups that sort of make their business to oppose India, Pakistan's relations with India. Generally speaking, I think Sharif does seem to has at least publicly committed to taking action on this, and I think that's an area where, provided he plays it smart, the military is not necessarily going to stand in his way. It sort of depends on to what extreme it goes, and of course, on the Indian side, there are also concerns because Sharif has touted sort of the economic relations, but has not discussed Kashmir or action against Lashkar-e-Taiba and sort of militant groups based in Punjab, which were linked to the 2008 Mumbai attacks. So, at least on the economic issues, he seems to want to move that relationship forward. But when it gets into sort of the security ties, terrorism ties, or terrorism concerns, that's a little more uncertain on how he might try and address those issues. On Afghanistan, he hasn't really discussed he hasn't to my knowledge, he hasn't really discussed it much. I mean, my read on it is that there's actually a fairly broad consensus within the Pakistani elite, both military and civilian, on sort of the approach to Afghanistan right now, which is that they are very much concerned about sort of what's going to happen once the US and the rest of the international community largely withdraw. They do not want to see sort of a flare up of civil war, and would like to see some kind of negotiated settlement to the conflict, but don't really know how to make that happen. And the Afghan Taliban and the Afghan government, led by Hamid Karzai, neither of them seems to be in a mood to talk with each other. And the Afghan government also is been engaged in some recent border conflicts with Pakistan. So on the Afghan side, the relationship has become quite tense. I think Pakistan has basically been distracted by elections for the past several months, and it's not really been an issue that they've really engaged in. And I don't know that Sharif really has a strong view on that necessarily differs from kind of the general consensus. I guess we'll see. But again, that's certainly an area where I think the military would not necessarily be ready to sort of give way to the civilians, although they have in the past, at least the past few years of the PPP government, at least sort of on the public level, tried to present kind of a united front across the Pakistan government.
So my last question for foreign policy is that how does Sharif view Iran then? Leaving out Afghanistan, India, what is this Pakistan? There's a potentially a Pakistan under Sharif view Iran as, a partner, as an enemy, as somebody who just is good for pipelines. I mean, what is the view coming from, Sharif and, his foreign policy team, if we can call it that?
I can't speak to this in super great detail, but I mean, the point that I've heard, the take that I've heard on this, is that I mean, Sharif's ties are much stronger with Saudi Arabia than Iran. I mean, he spent several years of exile in there and returned kind of in part through the help of the Saudis. So that's probably a more important relationship for him to preserve than building a new relationship with Iran, which the PPP sort of attempted off and on throughout its past tenure. So on the pipeline, we had a ceremony in sort of the late months of the outgoing government. I guess it's formally been inaugurated, but I don't think I think there's still been holdups in financing, finding the means through which to actually fund the construction on the Pakistan side of it, and the fact that the U.S. has pretty clearly said this is not something we're happy with, given the broader sort of U.S.-Iran relationship right now. I guess I would be surprised if this is something Sharif sort of jumps to move forward. But that said, the energy crisis, I mean, Pakistan faces a serious energy shortage generally. Its own domestic gas reserves are depleting. And so if it's not going to be the Iran option, he is going to have to, I think, get creative and finding other sources of power and other ways to sort of tackle that issue.
Okay, let's sort of switch gears now and sort of, look at, what is Sharif, the, let's see, I have to look up the party. There's so many party names, I have to look them up. The PML, so this is the Pakistan Muslim League, right? What is the relationship of that party to the other parties, in terms of coalition building? What is, you made the point that, I'm looking at the stats right now, and it seems like PTI took 11%, the PPPP, P3Ps took 11%, but it seems like the Muslim League, the Pakistan Muslim League, has a doesn't look like a majority, but a large enough plurality that coalition building becomes a matter of just picking and choosing independents or smaller, people from smaller parties. But walk us through, what does this coalition building look like? What is, the relationship between the PML and the rest of the parties?
I mean, I think right now it's a lot of sort of horse trading, I mean, haggling probably a bit with some of the smaller, because I think most of the padding out of the coalition will probably come from independent candidates who, I mean, some of whom were are former PML candidates anyways, who may have just missed the filing or left the party, but now of course want to get back in. I mean, so at the so like I said, at the national level, I think it'll probably be mostly just kind of a solid PMLN government. They might bring in a few of the smaller parties from the outlying provinces as kind of token gestures of accommodation, but they don't necessarily need to. And it'll probably be a much smaller cabinet government than the previous one, which, at one point was up to, almost 100, I think, cabinet members officially in the with some ministry or something, to try and bring people on board. In terms of the other parties, I think we don't have a determination yet on who will be the opposition leader in parliament, because the Pakistan People's Party, and the fourth P is parliamentarians. It's their official sort of registered party name for purpose of the Election Commission. But the Pakistan People's Party, the PPP, and the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, the PTI, led by Imran Khan, they're about even in terms of in the National Assembly representation. And the PTI has said, I mean, Imran Khan has basically ruled out partnerships with any of the previous parties in government. So it doesn't look like they will team up in opposition. So it's a question kind of which parties they will ally with to officially take the opposition leader position, and that's still ongoing. So I'm not sure. I'm not certain yet who will come out on top there. But generally speaking, the PMLN will be fairly solid at the national level. I mean, where it gets more complicated is at the provincial level, where you have the parties other than the PMLN winning close to effective control over most of the other provinces in the country outside of Punjab. So in Sindh, the Pakistan People's Party won, I believe a majority, maybe not an outright majority, but definitely the largest bloc in the Sindh Assembly. So they'll lead the government there, despite losing most of their seats in Punjab. So they'll at the provincial level still sort of have an institutional home. The PTI won most of its seats in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa in the northwest, so they will also probably form the government there. Although there's been a bit of, I mean, there's quite a bit of politicking going on right now. There's a possibility that the JUIF, it's a religious party led by Maulana Fazlur Rahman. There's a possibility that they may try and cobble together someone, an alternative coalition, and sort of edge the PTI out in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. And then in Balochistan, which sort of is we have the poorest sense of what actually happened on election day. Not a lot of observation there, and it's the least populous province. It's mostly sort of open terrain. There you saw both Pashtun and Baloch nationalist parties win, as well as a handful of religious party candidates. So it'll probably be sort of a hybrid, and independence as well. That'll be the most sort of messy coalition probably. But the overall impact of this, though, is that while you're going to have a fairly solid PMLN control at the center and at Punjab, the main opposition parties, while they'll be in opposition at the national level, are most likely going to control provincial governments. And under the Pakistani constitution over the past 5 years, the provincial governments have gotten more powers and more responsibilities. So the optimistic view on this is that it's going to kind of give them buy-in in the system and prevent and sort of reduce any incentives to try and appeal for military intervention or take any other sort of steps to kind of cut short the PMLN government, in which case we might conceivably see another 5 year 5 year term in office back to back, which would be unprecedented in the history of Pakistani governments. I mean, that's kind of what we saw in the previous government, is that the PMLN had Punjab. It was in opposition at the national level, but it had a provincial government. It was able to sort of enjoy the benefits of governing, and so did not sort of fundamentally rock the boat, even as it remained in opposition. The more pessimistic case is that you have this ends up exacerbating sort of federal tension, like federal provincial tensions, and you have, I mean, I think you already have some signs of this, some complaints of this. The history has been sort of one in which the surrounding provinces have often accused Punjab of dominating government, and so if the PMLN is not careful in sort of the way it manages its relations with the other provinces and the opposition, you there is the risk of, I think, sort of exacerbating the sort of the provincial tensions, and at the extreme, in a case like Balochistan, you have sort of full-blown separatist movements who sort of challenge the province's participation in Pakistan generally.
So I'm curious, is there anything to be said about, Imran Khan acting as a kingmaker or a spoiler? Because it seems like, maybe this is just the result of him being, very famous, very popular, but it seems like there's this bit of strain in the media now. It's talking about him. Because I think, the argument that's being made is that, he went from a non-entity in politics to, being able to command 11% of the vote. And now, The rumors are that he's going to act as a kingmaker, a spoiler, any sort of negative or positive, nickname or pronoun. But I mean, what is your feel for, PTI and Imran Khan and government? I mean, it really does seem like they were the party of just shaking their fist and being loud, and now they have, the responsibility of governance. Is that something that PTI and Imran Khan can, are they prepared to deal with? Is that, do you feel like they can deal with, being in charge and not just necessarily being purely, outside of government and purely in an opposition role?
Yeah, I think this is actually possibly the most interesting outcome of these elections, particularly compared to past elections, that you did have sort of the emergence of a rival third party, which was a credible threat, I think, to both the, I mean, as it turns out, the PTI, Imran Khan, mostly came in second place, pushed out the PPP, but was not sort of sufficiently at a level to really challenge the PMLN across most of the country, but still made a real, I mean, a very strong showing considering they boycotted in 2008 and previously had only won one seat. And now they're looking at 30 or so at the national level and probably leading a government. And as you say, this is not, I mean, the party does not have experience working in this way before. It really has been, I mean, he really put all his energy into sort of calls for change and making very sweeping promises of major structural systemic shakeups in Pakistan, sort of across a whole range of political and economic and foreign policy issues. So it did seem to really inspire a lot of participation from people who in the elections who maybe otherwise would not have done so. But the question now is sort of now that they're sort of faced with the limits, at least in this election, the limits of their reach. The question is sort of well, now what's going to be the next step for the party? And I mean, I think it's going to be. That's sort of going to be part of what we're going to be watching over the next several years, is trying to figure out the answer to that question. But I mean, I do think generally, Khan. My impression is that Imran Khan's strengths and the party's strengths have been in their campaigning. I mean, I did not expect. I mean, a few months ago, before the campaign season really picked off, it seemed like they had kind of peaked. And then during the campaign season, they really went all out in terms of mobilizing, getting tons of media coverage, social media activity, door-to-door campaigning, mostly concentrated in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and Punjab. I mean, there's a whole sort of new. At least some of the candidates and some of the party workers are new to politics in general, and they've just had this experience of sort of this really highly charged sort of campaign to sort of throw out the incumbents and bring in a new order. And so now what are they going to do about it now that they find themselves in the current situation? So I think it's going to be a challenge because I mean already I mean there's still protests going on now from the PTI saying at least in some constituencies rejecting the results, allegations of rigging. So that might setting aside the question of whether or not those allegations are true or not, which I'm honestly not in a position to judge, although I don't find it implausible given the state of sort of electoral democracy in Pakistan. But that I think realistically that's only going to carry them so far, because generally speaking most observers and almost all the major parties have signaled that they're going to accept this the outcome of the election. And I think the margin of victory for the PMLN was so big that realistically While individual rigging, may have resulted in some some changes in outcome potentially at the scale of victory that PML achieved, I don't think we can say it was so significant to outright change the result. So again, the question then, so now what, how to translate this sort of campaign machinery into governance machinery? I'm not sure that the PTI has really prepared for that. They do have, I mean, many of their, I mean, honestly, several of their candidates were sort of the perennial candidates who sort of switch from party to party, sort of with the waves. So some of them won and will enjoy the benefits of winning, but for others, I think you will probably see them, tack elsewhere. And so, how to build a party structure that can support policymaking, because I mean, the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa is something of a it's a bit of a challenging prize to have won, because all the previous governments in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, at least, I mean, the ANP, which led the Awami National Party, which led the government there, just got basically routed by the PTI. And prior to that, in the 2008 elections, the ANP basically routed the coalition of religious parties that had led the province before that. So it's tough to be an incumbent in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, partly because of the security situation and just sort of the general dissatisfaction with security and attacks by drone attacks, but also militant attacks, but also general levels of development. So it's going to be a real challenge, I think, for the PTI to sort of prove that it can deliver on a lot of its very substantial promises, and then build that into sort of an even bigger challenge, perhaps in the next election cycle, to see if they can make more inroads and sort of build on this.
So then, sort of the inverse of this, what is the People's Party, the PPPP, what do they do? I mean, it seems like they have the inverse problem of PTI, because they're going from governance to opposition. I mean, in the sense that their role in the government has been sort of sharply reduced. So, how do you conceptualize their role, or what do you see them, how do you see them approaching this new sort of, shift in power, shift in sort of, governance?
Well, I mean, at least so far, they've generally signaled acceptance of the results. I mean, this is not sort of unprecedented for the party. They do have a much longer sort of history, and in the 90s, traded governments back and forth with the PMLN a couple of times. So they have lost before, and I think, generally speaking, there's not no reason to necessarily think they can't come back again. Depending on how the PMLN does in its attempt to sort of resolve many of Pakistan's very substantial problems. And they do have a more solid hold over the government in Sindh than the PTI does in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, and experienced ministers. So generally speaking, I would expect them to do better at sort of rebuilding. That said, they are going to have to do some rebuilding, because they did basically lose their entire presence almost in Punjab, and now kind of face reduction to being a provincial party, when previously they had representation across the whole country. And this is complicated by the fact that their leadership is going through a major transition right now. After 2007, when Benazir Bhutto, who led the party, was assassinated, she bequeathed it to her son, Bilalwal Bhutto, and her husband, who's currently the president, Asif Ali Zardari. I mean, this is sort of in the tradition of sort of dynastic parties, political parties in South Asia. But Bill O'Wall is still young, only recently graduated from college and returned to the country. And Zardari, in the past year, has under court order been forced to at least formally give up his party affiliation as long as he's serving as president. In the campaign, you had a real challenge facing the PVP, in that, I mean, they faced some serious security threats, but they also faced a big challenge in that there was sort of no figurehead to kind of lead the campaign. And so part of what they're going to have to do in the next couple of years before the next election round is sort of figuring out, and I'm assuming this will be a fairly contentious process within the party and at the local level, but we'll see, figuring out sort of who are the new standard bearers going to be. I mean, I would assume Bhutto, Bill Bhutto, will still officially head the party, but now that it's basically, I mean, the former prime ministers, both the former prime ministers, PPP prime ministers, had been from Punjab. Now they're no longer in office. So institutionally, you're basically looking at representatives from Sindh, as well as a few. I mean, they do have a presence in the Senate, the upper house as well, that they'll retain till at least 2015. But yeah, it's gonna be there's gonna be, I think, a big question for the party is how to sort of reassess and figure out how it can reach particularly, I think, parts of urban Punjab, and even urban Sindh, although the Karachi is basically run by the MQM party. But broadening outside of the PPP base, which has been rural Sindh, and kind of landholding class there, they are going to face a big challenge to deliver a more compelling sort of more compelling case for election on a national scale going forward.
So, what has been the reaction of the sort of the quote deep state to the election results? What has, been the reaction of the sort of the judiciary and the military? Sort of, at least to a layman like me, two branches of government in Pakistan that play a role in shaping national politics, but to my knowledge, aren't necessarily elected. So, what has been the reaction, if there's been a reaction, of the judiciary and the military to the election results?
I mean, this will be a big question, particularly over the past 5 years. The previous government faced a lot of, I mean, it faced problems sort of balancing coalitions and opposition and challengers like Imran Khan out of parliament, but within the parliament as well, but also faced sort of balancing relations with the military and the judiciary, who on the military, particularly on foreign policy and security policy issues, as well as its budget and sort of appointments process, of course, quite carefully guarding its privileges against any attempts at civilian control, and the judiciary trying to sort of assert itself as an independent force, trying to assert, trying to enforce its, see its verdicts enforced, control the appointment of its membership, so all that combined really it produced a fairly divided system. Going into the elections, the military, led by General Kayani, quite publicly sort of sought to proclaim its neutrality. And I mean, it's of course basically impossible for me to judge the degree to which the military might still have been active behind the scenes. But at least at the public level, it seems to have pretty much held to that. Fairly, I mean, I don't think there was any sense of one candidate or the other being a preferred military candidate. By the military, and now the and generally speaking, stepping back and kind of letting the process run forward, which I think helped convince people that this was actually to participate, that their votes would actually be heard. And Kayani himself appeared on TV casting his vote on election day, made several speeches to the effect that the military wanted to support the democratic transition. So I think we've got to acknowledge that and say that was helpful to sort of the process. Now that the results are in, I mean, to date, I haven't seen any kind of comment on it. I wouldn't expect much public comment on it. I mean, the question is going to be sort of what happens when the PMLN, when Sharif takes office, and we start to get into questions of military budget decisions, and which previously the military has basically controlled for itself. And the appointment of Kayani's successor, which should come, I believe, in November, but later this fall. So that's when I think you'll see the military. And Sharif doesn't have sort of the experience that the PPP kind of earned the hard way over the past several years of coming to kind of a working relationship with the military on foreign policy issues and other sorts of things. So that will be a big question on how they work that out. In terms of the judiciary, I mean, the judiciary was very involved in setting sort of the terms of the contest, disqualifying candidates. Judicial officers were serving in sort of the candidate registration process, and now they are hearing challenges to the results. There are some election tribunals have been established specifically, but the Supreme Court itself and other members of other branches of the higher judiciary will also most likely have cases brought to them. Generally speaking, I don't know that the judiciary was necessarily particularly partial to any one party or against any one party in terms of who it disqualified. Although certainly the fact that the PPP was the incumbent and had committed a lot of actions in government that the court went after, that didn't help. I don't think that, I mean, the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Chaudhry, in the Supreme Court has certainly shown no hesitation for engaging on, what are essentially I mean, they are quite politically sensitive issues. So there's plenty of possibility that this courts might step in to invalidate individual election results or order repolling, some of which the Election Commission has already ordered revotes in particularly in Karachi. And the courts may well do that as well. I don't think, however, that you would see the courts sort of throw out the results entirely. And I mean, generally, they have been supportive of the process itself. I mean, in kind of earlier this year, we saw a big protest movement led by Tahrir al-Qadri, who is a sort of expatriate religious scholar who flew back to Pakistan at the beginning of the year and sort of led big high-profile media coverage for his protests in the against the Election Commission, basically saying that the Election Commission had not been appointed appropriately, that the results of the elections would not be valid, that it should be scrapped and a new commission appointed. And the courts basically threw that out, threw his petition out, did not, and instead focused mostly on his status as a dual national, and whether he had any sort of right to challenge the process at all. So in terms of so the courts, did not step in when they could have to sort of disrupt the election proceedings themselves, and instead sort of ensured that they did go ahead. So on the process, I wouldn't expect them to dramatically overturn. But now that the PMLN is coming into government, I think there's Chief Justice Chaudhry's term is going to end at the end of this year as well. So again, there will be a question of sort of what the next leadership of the courts looks like. and whether it takes the same sort of tack as Chief Justice Chaudhry did. But if it does, I'm sure there will be no shortage of legal challenges and scandals and other issues that the court can potentially go after the next government, just as it did the preceding one. So that will be unless and generally speaking, the PPP, which again faced a much more divided sort of base, generally speaking, rolled with the court's orders and accepted most of them, although in some cases after very long drawn out legal fights. The PMLN could potentially take a more confrontational stance if they feel they have sort of the support base to do that. So again, that will be a major relationship to watch in terms of how Nawaz Sharif and the rest of the party, the rest of the government, engages with the courts or the courts sort of attempts to assert itself over the operations of government.
Interesting. So let's end the conversation with, first, was there violence at the polling stations and, threats of violence, actual violence, whatever? And then, did that deter people from voting? And then three, who were the perpetrators of the violence, if there was any? Was it something just party, partisan type people just picking fights, or was it, terrorism, or describe the violence, or the lack, or why there was a lack thereof.
Well, so on election day itself, I think, I mean, the figures, they're still I'm not certain we have exact figures, but I saw something on the order of 40 people were killed around the country. So that's obviously violent, but by Pakistani standards, could have been worse. And I think the fear was it would have been a lot worse because the Pakistani Taliban militant group, particularly in the month or so running up to the elections, made repeated threats and carried out repeated attacks to try and disrupt the process. But on election day itself, that generally failed to materialize. And I think most of the reports of violence we have were sort of candidate on candidate, party supporters, getting into fist fights or gunfights. And so was lower level sort of incidents that are more sort of on par with historical election practices in Pakistan. But you did in the run up to the polls see disproportionate attacks and this has been going on in Pakistan for many years now, but attacks by the Pakistani Taliban in this case specifically targeting the Pakistan People's Party, which had led the government, the Awami National Party, which had led the government in the northwest Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, and the MQM party, which had led the government in Karachi. They explicitly singled out these groups as sort of apostates and secular parties was the brand, which seems to have unfortunately stuck now, and explicitly targeted them for violence. Several candidates were killed. And many more party workers and campaign offices targeted. And this did seem to have a real impact on these three parties' ability to campaign openly in the run-up to the election. So there was so that did have an impact, I think. Whether it had an impact to the degree to which it actually would have changed the results, I'm not sure because the tenure of the ANP and the PPP in particular in their respective areas, it's been a rough 5 years for Pakistan, particularly on the economic front, but also in terms of managing violence and all that sort of stuff. So whether they could have expected to do much better than this without the violence, I'm it's at this point it's kind of impossible to say, but with the hypothetical, but you did have disproportionate attacks targeting these groups, although other parties were also attacked as well by the Pakistani Taliban. But on election day itself, despite all this, I mean, you did see fairly high turnout, certainly in Punjab, to a lesser extent in Balochistan and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, but you know, and by comparison to past elections, you know, this was I think I said it's something on the order of 60% turnout, compared to I think the recorded figure for 2008 was 44%. So quite a big jump, especially considering the fact that, you know, there were explicit sort of messages from the Pakistani Taliban saying, you know, the democratic process is incompatible with Islam, and we will and people should not go to the polls, but they did. So I think that, you know, speaks to, if nothing else, we can say that there's a willingness on the part of the people of Pakistan to take the risk and to participate in an election that can choose new leaders for the country and potentially lead it in a direction where they can start addressing some of the many challenges facing the country. So I guess that's the optimistic side of it. I mean, I think it's a big question on how they will choose to confront particularly the Pakistani Taliban threat. I mean, the Sharif, the PMLN, the PTI have both said.
Hello? And we're back. Sorry about that. It's internet
Okay.
connection issues.
Yeah. So sorry, I'm not sure exactly where we left off, but essentially just making the point that the Pakistani Taliban did conduct these disproportionate attacks on in parties, the PPP, the ANP, and the MQM, did threaten voters, did basically denounce the whole election process as incompatible with Islam. But despite all that, people did come out and vote, and in fairly broad numbers. You know, not uniformly broad across the country, but generally speaking, people were willing to sort of risk the threat of violence, and sort of make their choices known, which I think, if nothing else, we can take as kind of a positive sign.
Definitely. So, you know, before we end, is there any sort of, you know, roundup comment you want to give us? Because, you know, I think Pakistan is this really complex situation. I think we dug pretty deep, but, you know, is there anything we missed or anything that you want to sort of touch on before we end?
Well, I mean, I think there's always lots more that we can dig into. I mean, I mean, the question that I have, I guess, as I'm sort of trying to figure out what happens next, you know, the impression is right now that the PMLN has something of a mandate and is going to be able to form a more cohesive, more stable government, and really take potentially more decisive action than its predecessor. And that would certainly be a shift from the past 5 years. So I guess it's a big question of how they choose to exercise this political capital that they seem to have earned. Whether they choose, because, you know, for all that the gains that they appear to have made, they still face opposition parties at the provincial level. They still face, you know, unelected centers of power in the military and the judiciary, and they still face, you know, the question of how to manage relations with the U.S., with India, with Afghanistan, and with all the sort of internal economic and security challenges facing the country. So, and so that will be the question, sort of, whether they are able to sort of thread the needle, and really tackle some of these issues, in a way that the previous government was not able to, or whether they also ultimately get consumed with sort of questions of balance of power and sort of determining sort of the limits of their authorities and ultimately fail to deliver. And should that happen, then what happens the next time we have an election scheduled?
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for coming on. So don't forget, Colin had a report before the elections that was called Previewing the Pakistani Elections that I think everybody should read because it does sort of round up some of the parties and gives you a really deep background to some of the issues we talked about today. So thank you for listening. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you for coming on.